Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm Janine Vosper, your host, and today with me I have Tanya Target. Now, Tanya is a solo parent and an entrepreneur, and she used the power of profile to build a six-figure business, and that was just within months of fleeing an emotional and psychological domestic violence situation. Often referred to as the media darling, Tanya Target is a former investigative news journalist who knows how to get the story. So in fact, she won an award for the best news story. An international speaker and former investigative reporter, Tanya has been quoted and featured in national and international media, including magazines, newspapers, and television. So over the past 2 years alone, her students have generated, wait for it, over $7.4 million using her winning publicity formula. Now, two of her signature talks are The Heart of a Fighter and How to Generate Over $100,000 in Continuous Free Publicity. You can see why I've got her on today, can't you? So those particular talks have seen her share the stage with the $400 million man and the New York Times number one bestseller, Jeff Walker, presenting over to 1,200 people at a time across the US. And Tanya is in the US at the moment, a Gold Coast girl, sharing between Gold Coast and beautiful sunny California. So welcome this morning, Tanya.
Hey, Janine. So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. So I apologise for stumbling over those words. It's a little bit earlier here for me. So I'm sure that the teeth will get in right place before we get much further along. You know, I've heard your story and read your story before and attended some of your training. And I'm just amazed at what you've been able to create and also be able to create for your clients as well in generating free publicity. So, you know, tell me how do your clients go about it? But I know that you believe certain things about media and that. So can you share your thoughts around that?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really passionate about stories, and there's a common myth perpetuated in the media, and I'm talking about mainstream media, so magazines, newspapers, TV, radio, that you need to know someone on TV to get on TV, or need to know someone in magazines to get in magazines. But having been someone who has literally, you know, when I had horses, fed her horses, you know, paid her mortgage, fed her child through the ability to find stories and share people's stories, I know that all it comes down to at the end of the day for a reporter, be that a TV, magazine, newspaper, radio, podcast, social media influencer, is that the person has a great story. Yes, in certain situations, you know, it pays to know certain people to get on certain shows. But for the majority of the time, if your story is good enough, or you pull elements of your story that are powerful, you pull content and expert tips that are powerful, then a reporter wants to hear from you. Because just like our customers live in pain, you know, it might be a health pain, fitness pain, relationship pain, reporters live in pain too. And just like we solve pains for our customers, reporters want their pain solved. And that pain is story pain. And all of us have amazing stories.
Now, that's one of the things I know that you're very good at doing is pulling or finding that story that each of us has, because most people, you know, really in general, most people haven't had anything traumatic happen, haven't had anything that they would consider to be a newsworthy story. But I've seen you at work, and I know that you can find a story within a story and really make people realize that there's a lot more to them and their story than what they realize.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And, you know, it's the grass is always greener, you know, like maybe my car's not as nice as that person's car and my lawn isn't as green as that person's, you know, lawn. And for the person sitting next to me, and I see this all the time as a media and publicity trainer, people go, I haven't been through something traumatic. I don't have a great story. Such and such has been through all of this. They've got such a great story. But to the person sitting next to you, your story is greener than theirs because they don't think that they've been through anything that anyone wants to hear about. And the person sitting next to them is far more interesting. We are so close to our story and we have shared our story so many times that we're quite tired and desensitized to our story. But what we need to remember is so many hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people haven't heard our story before. And it doesn't have to be earth-shattering. I mean, okay, I've been through a tsunami, inland tsunami. People, unfortunately, you know, passed away. I experienced a stroke from the stress of it when my business was literally washed away. And I have been through some pretty traumatic episodes, but I haven't always shared those aspects of my story because I wasn't ready. I hadn't healed enough. I needed to look after my daughter, particularly with the domestic violence aspect of it. So there were parts of my story that I didn't want to share, parts of my story that I couldn't share, and parts of my story that I may never share. So that's really important to know as well, is that you can share what is comfortable for you and what is good for you at this point in time. The other thing is that what we judge to be important in our story or devalue could literally be life-saving to somebody else. So the turning points in our life, you don't have to survive a stroke or go through a tsunami because that can actually be quite unrelatable. But to have struggled to build a business from home and the mistakes that you made and what you learned from it, to be in a perfect relationship and one day wake up and go, but I'm not happy, and have the courage to leave it, that's a very powerful story because there are some, I mean, have a look at Eat, Pray, Love. You know, the role that Julia Roberts plays, Elizabeth Gilbert, she had it all. She had everything. And she woke up one day and said, I need to go and go on a journey. Now, you could say, well, that doesn't sound, she didn't have anything traumatic, but what a powerful story that was. So we must be very careful when we're judging our story that even though it may not seem powerful to us, it can literally inspire and trigger change and ignite passion in others.
Yeah, and that is so true. And I present as well, as you're aware, my mind's about, you know, presenting or sales stories, and it's about having confidence to speak up. And it's because of what, and that's the thing is people forget, is that what's really easy for you is not necessarily easy for someone else. And because lately I've been interviewed by others, they've been delving a bit deeper and thinking about, right, I remember as a 12-year-old marching up one, because the teacher wouldn't do anything about it, marching one of the students in my classroom up to the headmaster and ignoring the teacher because this kid was so annoying and hurting all the girls in the class. And it was that, I didn't even remember that story until you start delving into it. But to enlarge on that story and talk about, well, that's where confidence came from, you know, as part of my story, a friend said, I've never heard you say that one before, you know, so you don't know where they're going to come from. It's just those trigger of memory and go, yeah, that's not much to me, but to somebody else to hear that, that's certainly something that inspires them. We don't know, do we?
We don't. And I think, you know, you touch on a really important point there, and it reminds me of like a filing cabinet. And this is the same in sales, leads, contacts, and it's the same with stories. So quite often when you've got a business, and I see this a lot, I've had direct selling businesses myself in the past and love my direct selling skincare. I don't sell it, but I use it. I love it. But I share it because I've seen this a number of times in the past, in the early days of network marketing, was guilty of this, where I would go through my contact book and I would go, oh, no, that person's not very good, or, oh, no, that person wouldn't like it. And we discount people. And we discount stories. Oh, no, that story's not very good. Oh, no, that's really not very interesting. But what happens is when we discount, we stop what's behind that. So by going down one avenue and go, oh, that person might be okay, I'm going to contact that person. Then the mind goes, oh, well, what about that person? Oh, what about that person? And it's the same with stories. Instead of discounting, we go, oh, well, you know, there was that time to do with confidence with that kid in that class. Oh, you know what? I had another episode. Like, oh, and then I had another one. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, five perhaps your most embarrassing or five forgettable stories that were transformative and key in becoming a leader and being able to speak from stage. What a powerful story. Long lost lessons and tales that we buried due to embarrassment in school that have made us world stage speakers. That's an incredibly powerful story. But yeah. when we dismiss it, we then we don't just dismiss that story. We discount and dismiss, and we are unable to access all the files behind that story. So say we get to K in the filing cabinet, mm-hmm. and we stop at K and we go, no, that story's not very good. We've just missed out on L, M, N, O, and the rest of the alphabet.
Mm. Yeah, and that, yeah, and they're just little stories, you know, they're just little things, as you said, but you build on and then it reinforces and reinforces. And the beauty, I think, with little stories is they're more relatable as well than
yeah, absolutely.
Big tragedies.
Yeah, I mean, a story that I often share, you know, I offer a range of training, and often when I do live training and I hear people say to me all the time, oh, I'm not a writer. You know, it's easy for you, Tanya, to write a media release or a press release or write a news article. You're a writer. And so I'll share a story. And that story is that in year 11 high school, my English teacher told me I would never write as long as my backside pointed downwards. And I failed English only to go and become an award-winning, you know, news reporter and front page news journalist. That's a really important and powerful story. And it's important also to match the story to the audience. So if I was speaking at an event and I was helping people with their confidence, say I was speaking at a creative writing or an author's event or something like that, and people were struggling with writer's block or struggling to get the book off the ground because they had paralysis, analysis and paralysis, I would share the fact that, you know what, you're not alone. In fact, I was told that I would never be able to write. And just by sharing that story, oh my God, she writes for a living. She had to write 3, 4, 5 stories per day. And she failed English. Well, if she can do it, I can do it. And that's the power of those stories that we discount.
Yeah, wouldn't you love to see that teacher now?
Yeah, well, that teacher did come to me for help a while back, about 7 or 8 years ago, and I did happen to gently remind them about their comment.
Goes around, comes around, Tanya.
It was polite, and yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. And so tell me about, you know, when it comes to media, what everyone's sort of so caught up with social media, but you know, I know that you work very differently to that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love social media, and I love social media for leveraging mainstream media. So here's the thing about social media. There's no barrier to entry. I mean, you're, on Facebook, I think you're supposed to be 12 years old, but the number of people that aren't 12 years old who have accounts, you know, is ridiculous. A lot of people open social media accounts in the names of their dogs so that they can, you know, win gems on Candy Saga and other things like that. So there's no barrier to entry. There's no qualification process, which means that if you're on social media and you claim to be an expert, no one's really validated that. But when you're in mainstream media, you know, you're quoted on CNN or featured on the Today Show or the Morning Show or the Daily Mail or Entrepreneur or Forbes or Success Global Magazine. And then that's shared across onto social media through you, through their social media site, because all news outlets have social media sites. You now not only access the millions of readers and viewers that they have through their news outlets, but you access the millions and millions of viewers on social media. But the big thing is, it's not you saying you're an expert. Now you have a third party quoting you as an expert. It is the ultimate in social proofing and validation. So now suddenly you're not just claiming you are an expert, you're the featured expert. And although most of us don't watch news on TV anymore, I mean, I do, what I watch on TV is iTunes and Netflix and YouTube exclusively, yet I stay current And I do that because although we don't watch necessarily the evening news anymore on a TV, we just have a different platform. We still consume it on Twitter. We still consume it on Facebook. We just, you know, we consume the news. It's just on a different platform. So news is still very, very strong, and their followers, they have millions and millions of followers. So you can tap into, in America, for instance, the Today Show in America, 3.1 million viewers. They have over 3.2 million followers on Facebook. So when you appear on the Today Show, you get access to all of their, you know, their daily, weekly, monthly viewers. And then, of course, you get access to all their social media followers as well. So it is creating authority on steroids.
That would be, a lot of people be thinking, well, there's no way I'd ever get, you know, the Australian equivalent to Sunrise or on the Today Show in the US or something. They'd be thinking, well, there's nothing that I've got that's going to make it worthwhile to get interviewed on a show like that.
Well, that's because they're thinking the grass is always greener. So my thoughts would be this, and I've had students, I've got students in, I think it's about 12 countries, and I've had students appear on media in Australia, in the UK, and in America. It's a matter of saying, okay, well, what is the audience? So if you wanted to get on a breakfast TV show, for instance, the content that they share on a breakfast TV show is different to what they give in the evening and different again to what they give late night. So this is a bit of a touchy subject, but suicide, it's not something people want to watch when they're eating their Weet-Bix starting their day, but it's something that you'll hear about on the evening shows on the project at 7 o'clock or something like that. So it's important that you match the content of what you're wanting to get media for with the palate of the audience that you're serving it to. So that's the first thing. The next thing would be, well, how do I make myself relevant? Because if you want to get on the Today Show in America, well, you need to be relevant to a story that's breaking in America, or a story that's breaking in the UK. And you can do that by doing something called newsjacking, which is where you basically gatecrash a story that's already timely and current, it's already happening in the news, and you can add to that public conversation.
I remember you doing something about airports that got a story on Sunrise or one, picked up by some of the morning programs here in Australia. And that was a bit of that newsjacking, wasn't it?
Actually, that was really interesting. So thanks for that, Janine.
History, Tanya. History.
Okay. So I have gone undercover, staking out politicians' love nests, uncovering terrorist training camps, wading through crocodile-infested waters, driving to the eyes of cyclones, hidden cameras in for pedophile stories that ran 2 weeks in a row, lead story 60 minutes. But the story that I seem to be remembered for is the price of tampons at Melbourne Airport. I was newsjacking the tennis was on in Melbourne. Is it the Davis Cup?
May have been the Davis Cup, but they had the Australian Open.
It was the Australian Open. You can tell I watched. See, you don't even need to follow these things to leverage them.
No.
And I knew that there were a whole heap of international visitors for the Australian Open. And I've been running a workshop down in Melbourne, and I got to the airport early, and I like to take my daughter with me as much as I can because I want to expose her to different cultures, different cities, entrepreneurial lifestyle. And we arrived at the airport early, and I was flying a budget airline, and I think it was Tiger or something, and they wouldn't let me through. You can only, like, if you're more than 2 hours, then you can't even get through airport security. So I was forced to wait, you know, in those little holding cells outside of airport security where all the prices are ridiculous. And my daughter was hungry, so of course I had to feed her. I mean, I would be happy to starve myself out of principle, but she was hungry, so I had to be a good mum and feed her. And I bought like 2 sandwiches and 2 bottles of water, and from memory it came to something like $37. Right. And I said to the lady behind the counter, "You're kidding, aren't you? Have you got the wrong order here? And she said, "Oh no, you know, 2 sandwiches and 2 bottles of water." And I just went, that's airport robbery. I was so incensed. So I started looking around and I saw that the price of tampons was like $20 for a box. Right. And then, and being a journalist, I thought, well, okay, well, if the tampons are $20 and a woman, I must say, I thought, where's the chocolate? Because someone's got their period, they're going to want some chocolate. And I went and checked and the chocolate was ridiculous. Like, you know, just off the top of my mind, it was like $6 or $7 for a bar of chocolate. And then I thought, well, do the men get a hard time? Condoms were ridiculous. They were like $24, $25 or something. I had all my gear with me because I'd been doing a media workshop. So I opened up my professional recording gear and I started filming around. And I used the open to make it also timely and current. But I actually reverse engineered and made a viral video. And by making that video viral, I got it on breakfast TV, and the intention was to always get it on breakfast TV. So when you know what breakfast TV likes, you know how to put the pitch together, then you know what to give them, and you have a higher chance of success. And that story ended up not only in Australia but in America, and is still occasionally sent to me by academics from all around the world who love to send me tampon updates on luxury taxes around the world. I will forever be known as Tampon Tanya.
I love the alliteration there. But that's what you're saying, though. You know, that's why I brought it up. It's such a brilliant example of the newsjacking, but and a subject that really is, you know, obviously it was important enough to.
Well, yeah, and here's the hilarious thing about it. You know, it's on the one hand, you know, I'm a very serious journalist, but then I do a story about tampons, which also makes me quite relatable. I'm a woman, I'm outraged, I'm a consumer, enough is enough. They're price gouging at airports. Everybody knows they price gouge at airports. So now I've tapped into a universal consciousness of, yeah, they are. And that happens all around the world. The bigger, the wider appeal that you can make a story, the bigger the audience that you can access via the media. So when you make it relevant to families, when you make it relevant to homeowners, when you make it relevant to consumers, then you can start to get into consumer media. And that is your mainstream media. And so that's what I was doing. So, and the really cool thing about it too is I've used that tampon video in my training because elements of what I did when I put that story together, my students could see the training in real life and see it convert. And the other beautiful thing about it is that if I can get breakfast TV for tampon prices at an airport, what could you do with a legitimate story?
Yeah, absolutely. And that you, during that, when you're saying that you mentioned about the pitch. Now, this is what people get wrong, isn't it? They pitch their business rather than what the journalists want. So can you enlarge on that?
Yeah, totally. So this is 9 times out of 10, even closer, like 95% of the time. And this is no fault of the business owner. I want to make that quite clear. And I'm going to get, you know, stoned publicly for this. I don't mean drugs, of course. I mean rocks. As I've got to say that because I'm in California and marijuana is legal over here. Right. But so I thought, oh, I better clarify that for your international audience. We networking groups, it's all about the elevator pitch. They go around the room. What do you do? What do you sell? And it's the antithesis of what a journalist is looking for. And when I started networking, I actually found it really hard to do that elevator pitch because I never had one, because journalists are trained to, you know, hang up on you or put you through the advertising department if they even smell a hint of you trying to get publicity for your business. So because we're conditioned to have this elevator pitch, which is because that's not a universal term. And what that basically means is that, you know, you're giving the trailer for your business, the commercial, 30-second commercial, why people should do business with you. I really struggled with it. What the journalist wants to hear is not about what you do and, you know, what products you sell, but they want to hear about, you know, what brought you to this moment. Why is it important that what you're sharing other people need to hear? And what's the impact of that not being heard? So say, for instance, I was working with a private client this morning. We were talking about Power. He works in the solar industry. And, you know, what is the impact of this different legislation to do with solar and installation of different size solar devices? Now, solar panels, now he could just go in and, you know, we've got these sizes. That's not what it's all about the products that you sell. It's about, okay, well, how much are people under solaring their home and what's happening as a result of that? What does that mean out of the hip pocket of the average mum and dad homeowner who are currently struggling? And what does that mean in terms of, because there's all kinds of legislation around how they're installed or not installed, if you're trying to add on to your home and then you want to sell your home, what's that going to do to the value? The minute you start making it relevant to everyday mum and dads and someone then hears that, they're going to hear that you are the expert and they're like, oh, who is this person about solar? Well, then they're going to go and look for you. But if you just go in with the sell, I mean, all of us leave the room when the ads come on TV. I always turn up to the movie theater late because I want to see the trailers, but I don't want to see the ads before the trailers. So why go in then with this advertisement? Why not come in with the story? That's what people come back in the room for. That's what people want to hear. Yet that's not what we are trained to do. So we come in with this kind of Pavlov training of giving a 30-second commercial when really people aren't going to remember that. They remember how we make them feel. So when I go to a networking event, I'll often talk about the fact that I'm a kite surfer, roller derby enthusiast, and I own the world's naughtiest cocker spaniel. And when I'm not trying to control him raiding the fridge, I'm a medium publicity coach. Mm. And people have a bit of a laugh. It creates commonality because they might have a badly behaving dog as well. And, oh, you do roller derby? That's wild. And then I can start to have a conversation and a relationship. And then we can talk about what I do.
Yeah. And that does build that connection. And that's what makes people relatable. And I think that that's part of what people have been doing. We get so much into this networking mindset now that we forget that we should be in the barbecue mindset, you know, just sitting around chatting with friends and sharing stories. Yeah.
And it's so great you mentioned that because as myself as a journalist and many of my friends are journalists, and we often get asked to do, you know, media training, particularly when I was working as a journalist as well, just as a guest speaker somewhere, which I do now professionally, but just when I was doing little tidbits, one of the tiny little tidbit I would share when I would say go into a school or something would be when you're at a barbecue and you're sharing a story and the other person is leaning in, or if you're in a coffee shop and you're sharing something with a girlfriend over, you know, a cappuccino and they lean in, that's the bit that you should be leading with for the journalist. What we tend to do is we go in and we do the social graces and we shake hand and I do this and we give them kind of all this what I call foreplay of the conversation. When the journalist doesn't want any of that foreplay, they want you to get straight to the bit that's going to make them lean in. Now, what we think will make them lean in is not what will actually make them lean in. In fact, the stuff that we shy away from is the stuff that they want.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of these people that I really don't get caught up with a lot with the again, with the media stuff, you know, and the sad stories on TV, you know, people's things, tragedies and that. I tend to avoid those. It's just not something that is of interest to me. But some of them are marketed so well, you can't not watch it. You have to watch it, and because they're just done extremely well. We've got, I don't know whether you've, Andrew Denton has now got another program begun in Australia called Interview. And because he's such a brilliant interviewer, that's what he's grabbing is these stories. And I think everybody, the audience, whether at home or in the audience, they are doing exactly what you said, leaning into these stories because of the way he pulls that really interesting information from people.
Yeah, and I mean, stories, it is stories that are passed down from generation to generation. Every culture passes stories down. Every religion records stories and passes those stories down and passes those stories forward. When we go to an event, we don't necessarily remember the content that has been taught. In fact, we've usually got to refer to our notes, but we don't have to refer to our notes to remember a powerful story.
Mm.
So when we go into these networking events, it's the powerful stories that we need to be sharing. What is it about us in that situation, in that room right now, that we could be sharing to de-arm other people, create resonance with other people, create empathy with other people, connect with other people, and create curiosity so that they want to come and talk to us instead of this hard sell, which just repels people. I mean, it repels us. Mm. We as consumers don't like to be sold to. We don't like used car salesmen or any of that kind of schlicko, schmicko sell. Yet that's what we do in networking groups, and that's what business owners do when they go to reporters. Why do we do that when we don't like that ourselves?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why people, and because that's part of what I do is sales coaching, that's why people get so uncomfortable about sales. They feel like, you know, they don't want to intrude and they don't want to annoy people and all of that because they're doing exactly that type of selling instead of don't sell. That's one of my first things I advise people, don't sell. You know, it's not, you're going to be uncomfortable. The other people are going to be uncomfortable and you're not going to build up connection. So it's exactly the same here, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's all about, you know, people, it drives me mad. People talk about in selling with the features and the benefits. That's not about the features and the benefits. I'm not going to buy it because I get six CDs or 12 DVDs. I'm going to buy it for the transformation. Tell me the story. Tell me the before. Tell me the after. Share the journey with me. And that's what we're doing. It's done in a slightly different format, of course, but in the essence of it, that's what we're doing with the journalist. The before, the after, the transformation, your hero's journey. You see, there are so many experts out there. You know, I'm not the only media and publicity expert. I'm not the only journalist. You know, there's lots of health coaches. There's lots of fitness coaches. They're everywhere. What's unique is our journey. What's unique is the story that brought us to where we are today and our life experiences and the lessons. So when we share that story, and as I said before, we may never share the full story. And that's why sometimes celebrities come out 50 years after they've been in the media with a tell-all story because they weren't quite ready to share it. And I want to emphasize that because there will be people listening going, I'm not ready to share my story. That's okay. I'm going to give you permission that you can share it when you're comfortable, and you may never be comfortable. But there's still elements of your story that you could be pulling, that you could be sharing, that could be having an impact, and then can create that mental market share in consumers and show and paint that transformation, because that's what we buy. We don't buy the features and the benefits. We don't buy the deliverables. We buy the transformation, and that's the story. And that is our unique point of difference. We can all go to the same university. We can all do the same course, all do the same conference. But what makes one health coach different from another health coach is their journey. That's their unique point of difference. And when you withhold that story as part of your marketing, then you are really operating business with not just one hand tied behind your back, but both hands tied behind your back.
Mm. Yeah, it absolutely makes a lot of sense. But I suppose people sort of think that they have to know media. I know you've got the publicity, but that's what I would imagine people think. Well, I don't know people in media anyway. You know, that would definitely hold me back.
Yeah, well, you probably didn't know much about your business when you started it either. Yeah. I mean, whenever we're trying something new, there's always a learning curve. You know, if you didn't know someone in sales, did that stop you from starting sales? You know, you didn't know anything about weight loss, but did that stop you from learning about weight loss? If you wanted to get started with the media and what's stopping you is that you don't know anybody, that's a myth. It's very, very easy. So if it's okay, I'd like to share a really quick way that people can start to feel comfortable and get to know who to contact.
That would be excellent. Thank you.
No, you're very welcome. So the first thing that I do, and I just did this today with the client I was talking about, is I go to Google, okay? Now, you can join a very expensive database, and I have joined some very expensive databases in my time, and here's the sad reality. They are all out of date. It does not matter how often they claim they update them. There are journalists that haven't worked for years. It's a high turnover industry. So even when I was using expensive databases, I would still take that journalist's details and pump it into Google to make sure that they were still working at that news outlet. So you can save a step and some coin by doing that. So I go to Google, and let's say I just did, this is fresh in my mind because I did solar this morning. Solar falls is consumer, isn't it? It's a consumer awareness issue. So I did top 10 consumer magazines, and I pumped that into Google. And that brought up the top 10 consumer magazines worldwide. Then I did top 10 consumer magazines, America. Then I did top 10 consumer magazines, Australia. Top 10, United Kingdom. You can do this all around the world. There's a double up of some of them because they're global and they're syndicated. But I'm looking for, and I am actually looking for those double up in particular of those publications. Now I've started to create a list of the top 10 consumer. Now I'm going to do most popular consumer magazines because that could be different. And then I'm going to go, okay, well, what else does solar fall into? Renewable energy. So I'm looking for media sites that are renewable energy, green energy, alternate power. So I start looking for different media outlets that have that. So I will pump those into Google and play with magazine on the end to media outlet, to radio, to podcasts, and I'm going to start to very, very quickly pull media sites. Another great way, and I did this morning too, is I went solar energy and then I hit the news option on Google and that pulled up all the current news stories. Now, the beautiful thing about that is when I went through to one of them, it wasn't CNN, it was another one. I clicked on it and it had three different categories of renewable energy. One of them was there was environmental, there was coal and gas, which was not relevant. There was renewable and there was one other. Three of them were relevant. The important part of that was that publication broke energy into four different sections of its news outlet. Now, what's important about that is knowing which section to go to is going to increase my chances of success. What I then did was I clicked on the renewable energy section. That brought up all the stories written under that section of that news outlet, which then brought up all the journalists. I then clicked up on each of the news articles, took the journalist's name, pumped it into Google, and had a look for them on LinkedIn, Twitter, and anywhere else. Quite often, their contact details will be on Twitter, if not LinkedIn. Quite often, particularly with international media outlets, they will actually have the reporter names and contacts listed. Very easy way of finding out who you need to contact without even needing to know which other publications in your industry. Most of us don't know. Here's a little secret. Most PR people don't know either. We are constantly getting clients in areas we have no interest in. For instance, many years ago, I had a client who owned a restaurant and he wanted me to get him into the Good Taste magazine and Good Food, and I had no contacts there. And in fact, I think you know this, Janine, I am a terrible cook. I have a Facebook page called The Kitchen Assassin. I have set my dressing gown on fire, boiling an egg, chopped the end of my finger off.
That's a skill.
It is a skill, yeah. And I gave myself a black eye over fizzing a SodaStream bottle. So I had no contacts, and to be honest, food does not interest me. But I know how to find contacts. I know that by Googling food articles, by Googling food critics, by pulling up top 10 food magazines, top 10 foodie magazines, top 10 foodie social media influencers, I'm going to find the outlets. Mm. When I find the outlets, I can find the articles. When I can find the articles, I can find the reporter. That's the first step, a very simple step, and exactly what a publicist would do and charge you an arm and a leg for. And then I can set up Google Alerts so more of those articles can drop in my inbox. I can follow that reporter on Twitter. I can reshare and start to build a relationship. Now I know exactly who I need to go to at an outlet. And if that journalist has a pain point, and they do, and they're looking for stories as they are, and I have a story, then I know exactly now who to go to.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And there's really no excuse not to do that with the access that we have to the internet. It just, and to all that information, it's just all there, isn't it? I can imagine, you know, 15 years ago, it would have been a completely different story, but we don't have an excuse why we can't find that information now at all.
No, we don't. Years ago, we just had the Margaret, I always get her name wrong because I'm always getting confused with the photographer. We had the Margaret Gies or Margaret Mees. Please, I've been making the mistake for 23 years, so please forgive me with her name, but the printed media Bible, and it was very expensive and it wasn't obtainable for everybody. It's all online now. You know, what still is an art form and what people still do need to learn how to do is how to approach that journalist properly, what that journalist wants, but the contact details are there. So it's a limiting belief. When we say, I don't know anyone in the media, it's something you're telling yourself because, to be honest, you're probably scared. You might be worried about rejection. You might be worried that you haven't quite got it right. And you may even be worried about success. A lot of people don't want to be on TV, and that's okay. You can build a huge profile by being in magazines, newspapers, radio, podcasts. You don't have to necessarily get on TV. Don't let that stop you. I say if you've never started with media before, do local newspapers in Australia, in the States. Local newspapers, of course, are dead, but there's local radio. There is local TV if you want to do it, and there's podcasts and magazines and so forth. The magazines are also a great starting point. So if you're thinking, I don't know anyone, it's, to be honest, you're just putting a wall up where there really isn't one. We're actually making excuses for ourselves.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that do that. And talking about making excuses, now this is something that I've heard you say before, that if we have a plan B, it sets us up for failure.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, when I've been networking, and I still do network, but not to the extent that I used to, and I would be networking all the time, and I would hear women in particular say to me, well, I'm on maternity leave and I've started this business, and if it doesn't work out, I can go back to work. And it would be depending on the person I was speaking to, but sometimes I would say, well, I think you should just go back to work now. What do you mean? And I said, well, you're already talking about if it doesn't work out, you've got a safety net. So you're not going to give it its all. You haven't, you know, the Vikings burnt the boats because there was no turning back. Mm. You know, you literally have to cut the parachute and be all in and committed. If there's a safety net and, oh, I can always go and get a day job, or I could always go and do this, or I could always, you know, I've got long service leave, I could always go back. I'm sorry to say, but you are going to go back because you are not fully committed.
Yeah, I had a work with one of my clients yesterday, and she'll be listening to, she'll eventually listen to this podcast, but she's working on her plan B at the moment. And I kept the coaching session on her plan A because I want her to focus on her plan A, because it's a really good business model. It just needs to get a lot of things right in place to support it. But I just thought the attention's going to be diverted. And I know that income is important, but it's just that attention part as well. But, yeah, I know that's not what we've been talking about with media, but it sort of is, isn't it? It's all, you know, boots.
Well, it is. I mean, if you've got it all, you know, and it is a controversial viewpoint. There's many people who agree with me and there's people who don't. And I think I can see their point at the same time, but having been an entrepreneur now for, I'm not quite sure, my daughter's 14, so it'd be about 16 years. I haven't seen anyone with a plan B that is still going. You know, I mean, I'm over here in the States, no plan B whatsoever. I either sink or swim. I either get the speaking engagements, fill my sales funnel, get media, get podcasts, continue to build authority and profile to fill my sales funnel and close those deals, make sales, or I don't. Mm. There's no option to go and do something else. You know, when I first started speaking, selling from stage almost 5 years ago now, I was on welfare. I had left you spoke about it when you introed me, I left a horrible relationship with what I could fit in a truck during school hours. And you know, there were some horrible things that were going on. My daughter didn't even know I was going because I needed to do that to protect her. And I had 6 weeks' rent in the bank, and I would at night cry, wondering how I was going to feed her in 6 weeks' time. No family, no one to buy me groceries. In fact, you know, when I'd been to the local Centrelink, they were telling me where I could go for food handouts and food vouchers, and that was very confronting, and I never had to use it, but you know, I don't think that's a plan B. If I needed to go and get food from a charity, I don't think that's a plan B. Plan B is, if this doesn't work, I'm gonna go get a day job. It was never a plan B for me. This had to work because everything was on the line. This had to work because I had to show my daughter that you could be a single mum, a single parent, a single dad, and if she ever found herself in this situation, she could give herself permission to follow her dream, not quit her dream because her relationship didn't work. This had to work for me. And because it had to work, because I had everything riding on it, I worked the hours I needed to. I made the uncomfortable calls I needed to. I made the uncomfortable, you know, closing calls for sales that I needed to. I got so far out of my comfort zone, I didn't even know where I was. And I had to, because there was no backup plan. And when there's no backup plan, you find ways of making money. You find new products to launch. You find upsells and downsells. You learn about cart abandonment sequences, and you learn about different ways you can add different revenue into your business. And suddenly you go from not wondering if how you're going to get a sale to all these different opportunities opening up to you because you've been fully committed. But when you have that plan B, it goes back to that filing cabinet. You've now cut off at the letter B. And all these options behind you, C, D, E, F, G, to the end of the alphabet in products, income streams, possible leads and opportunities, they're cut off because you have a plan B. Therefore, your options stop there. When there is no plan B, your options are endless because you have to make it work.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so important, isn't it? You know, and look, we do need the funds. That's the practicality to live. But it does, if you've got this laser focus on what you want, then you will work towards it. But if you've got scattered interests, then it just, it does deflect from what you're doing. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the necessity of invention. So when you are, you know, when you are down to your last few dollars, and I, like many entrepreneurs, have been there before, you suddenly find ways to do things. You find ways to market your business that are free. You find ways to fill your sales funnel that are free. I mean, the first 18 months of selling from stage, I spent not a single cent on marketing, and I had a six-figure business within 6 months. Because when you don't have the funds and you basically have to be resilient, you have to be creative, and you have to MacGyver solutions or you go hungry, suddenly you find ways of making money that are legal, of course.
Yeah, well, that helps too.
Yeah, but you do. And it's kind of like when you are in the trenches, it is the mother of invention. Whereas when you have that, oh, well, I can always go back and do this, you're not going to access that other part.
No, need isn't as great.
Yeah, that's right. And you find solutions. While we're talking, there's an amazing, it's not new, I'm just trying to find it for you. It's in my audiobooks, and it's one of my favorite audios. I can see the fellow, he's a Shark Tank in America, Shark Tank fellow. The Power of Broke, that's right, by Damon John. How it's called The Power of Broke, How Empty Pockets, A Tight Budget, and A Hunger. And I can't read the rest, I apologize. But the title of the book is The Power of Broke. And basically what he talks about is, you know what, when you got no money, it makes you hungry and successful, particularly when you've got to have no plan B.
No. And look, you know, when you get into the world, when they talk about people, you know, hit rock bottom, and that's when they make the life changes and choose different responses to what they've been doing in the past, isn't it? Because there's nowhere to go from there as well. So we don't want to do that, though. But that's the same sort of mindset, isn't it? It's that, okay, well, I've got to move from here.
Well, my mindset is that this can only, it's not that this can't fail, because the subconscious doesn't hear the word can't, it hears this can fail. My mindset is this will work. There is this, the only option is for this to work. Yeah. And I will find a way of making this work. Now, if that means I need to pivot, I will, because you need proof of product in the marketplace. And there's been a product that's been under creation over here and with myself and my partner Anthony, and we have pivoted a few times on that. And it's had some proof of product, and now it's had even more proof of product. So it's not that necessarily what you go to market with is exactly the product that you're going to be selling in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months time. What it means is you're going to go to market with it. You're going to watch that reaction. You're going to be totally committed to it and be open to pivoting if need be. You pivot, you don't quit. There's a huge difference.
Yes, very much so. And I know with I had a little sort of needing clarity thing last weekend, and I got the whiteboard out and and did the whole umbrella with the two brands that I work with and what I do with them, and just to gain that, oh my gosh, there's an awful lot of product here, and you know, just what am I? And you need to do that sometimes, just to, okay, so that one works, that one maybe doesn't, that one needs to be built on, and develop it from there.
Yeah. And I mean, identifying your assets. So, you know, all of us have amazing assets that are free. So for instance, you know, are you a good speaker? Could you be interviewed on podcasts? Could you be a guest columnist? Could you, you might not have a product, but you might be able to create a product with other people. Could you give a bonus product to someone else to get them into your sales funnel? Could you create a mastermind and you just be kind of the organizer of the mastermind, and you can bring in other experts to fill the mastermind? So there's all kinds of different things that you could be doing for free to be utilizing your genius to bring in additional revenue streams. Mm-hmm. But we don't often sit down and go, well, what are my assets? So if I was going to list my assets, I would go, okay, well, I can write stories. I can ghostwrite stories. I can contribute stories. So I could get published as a journalist, and I could get published as a guest columnist. Many of your listeners will be able to get published as a guest columnist. That drives leads. Those leads are free. You could fill your sales funnel with free leads. Yeah. So there's no need to necessarily go and get another job. What else do you have an asset? Well, you can talk. You know, that's free. So you could create a talk, go to networking events. They're still looking for networking events at any time of the year. I made it quite clear when I came to America a few months ago, when I reached out to the networking events, because they do book over here a good 12 months in advance. I just said to them, look, I'd love to be considered for speaking this year. I know they're pretty much booked, but I'm not precious about being an understudy. So if someone cancels or gets sick, because I know things pop up as someone who's organized events myself, love for you to call me. And if I'm available, I'll come and be your speaker. Well, I've had that. Someone actually called me from a significant networking event. I actually sadly couldn't make it because I'm traveling again. But as a result of that, they've already now booked me for the first part of next year. Mm. So you can still get bookings for 2018. You could be taking bookings for 2019. Now, you might not even have a talk yet. Just get a booking. And now you've got a date. You're going to have to put your talk together, and you're going to have from that talk something to sell into. So all of us can be speaking. That's free. Speaking is free. So that's another asset that you have. You could be starting a meetup group. That's free. And you could be bringing people into your meetup group and putting them into a sales funnel. Mm. So there's so many things that we can be doing when we think outside the box, when we think about, okay, well, what are our assets? What can I do that's free? You don't need money to market. You just need creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're coming to the end of our time, Tanya. It's gone so quickly.
Just a
couple of takeaway points that you want people to remember, particularly that we've covered in this interview.
I would love for you all to know that you don't need to know anyone in the media to get started in the media. And that I can tell you right now, as a journalist who still works as a journalist, who's been at the coalface of news reporting for the last 23 years, we want to hear from you. We do want to hear in a particular way. You know, there is a formula, but we really do want to hear from you. And, you know, it doesn't matter how long you have been in business. It doesn't matter if you've even, you know, I was getting media for business before I'd even started it. The fact is that you have value to share. And it's so important that you share that, because you have a unique voice. Only you can share your expertise in the way that you do. And all of us speak a slightly different language, which means that there's someone out there waiting for you to share your expertise and your unique story in only the way that you can say it, and share it. When we keep our story to ourselves, when we keep our expertise to ourselves, we are in fact being selfish, because we've been on a journey to help and inspire and share that with others. And so if you're thinking, I need to be in business for a really long time, I need to know someone in the media to get in the media, I'm hoping that what I've shared here with you today shows you just how you can get started. And the second point is, if you think that mainstream media is dead, I urge you to go and have a look at their social media followers. They are influencers still. The platform has changed. We just don't watch the TV. You can be leveraging those news outlets and their millions and millions of followers on just one platform alone, not even counting Twitter, not even counting Instagram or any of the others that are popping up. You can be leveraging that to build true authority in your field to drive free leads into your sales funnel.
Yeah, that's excellent. So if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that, Tanya?
Well, I have, if it's all right with you, I do actually have a free course to expand more on what we have been discussing that I have given you the link for. That's probably the best way. I have a social media page, Tanya Target, on Facebook. You can email me if you'd like to talk to me privately as well. That's Tanya with a Y at tanyatarget.com. And Tanya Target has two T's at the end of T and at the end of Target, I should say. I'm so sorry. And I also have a free workshop. I have shortened it for you. So it is bit.ly/free PR workshop. So that's bit.ly/free PR workshop. And it's a really awesome program. That one is for free. It's a video series. It's got a workbook. And I'd love for you to go through that, share your comments, and let me know. It's going to help you find your story. It's going to help you get started in the media. We're going to talk about Google Alerts. It completely builds on exactly what we've talked about today with some new stuff.
Yeah, look, that's good. And I'll put that up also when the podcast goes live.
Oh, thank you.
The details of how to get in contact. So, you know, if the listeners want to, you know, use the power of their stories and create authority and credibility and become key influencers in the industry, then I really highly recommend that you get in touch with Tanya, because that is exactly from you by listening now, and that's exactly what she can offer. Thank you, Tanya. I really appreciate your time today. And we took a few goes to actually catch up. So I'm so glad we've been able to do this. It's been an excellent interview. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for bringing up the tampon story again.
Oh, that's history. I know things. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosby, your host, and I look forward to you listening next time. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.